I'm speaking with Alan Rosenfeld, who is a resident of Colorado State and was arrested at Governor Jared Polis's State of the State on Thursday, January 9th. Alan, why don't you just tell us why you were there that day?
Well, the general topic of the protest, there were three specific demands. One of them had to do with asking to stop a specific fracking site, which is uniquely outrageous. Up a little bit north of me, there is an elementary school, Bella Vista, where the students are primarily low-income and minority, and they've approved fracking wells very close to the school that will be poisoning the minority students. So one of the demands was to shut down those wells in general. The other larger demand had to do with kind of just the generic lack of action by the governor and by the Democrats who control the legislature on climate issues. And then part of that, of course, is specific to the fracking question, which we're under attack here in Colorado. And the Democrats pretty clearly promised their constituents they would keep us safe if we gave them power, and they've broken that promise.
Can you explain what you mean by you're under attack?
Sure. Oil and gas is, has taken over the government and is demanding the right to drill anywhere they want, as close as they want to houses, to schools, to water supplies, basically they have. It's very much like what happened around the world in the third world countries when the imperialists came in and said, "We're going to take your minerals, and we don't care, and you have no say." They're saying the citizens have no say, and when the citizens of communities where I live have gotten referendums and have voted to stop the fracking in their communities, the government on behalf of oil and gas industries have sued to overturn those election results. So, and they're threatening to, and then under attack is, so we were peacefully protesting the poisoning of our water and air, and they sent in police to physically remove us and arrest us and held us in jail for 30 hours. It could just as well have been a military action. They're attacking us.
So you had a court date today. What was the outcome of
that?
The
date was yesterday. It was yesterday. Well, the irony, of course, is the building where we appeared was the Denver Justice Center. And, you don't know it, but I happen to be a lawyer and so know very well how ironic it is to talk about justice in the legal system. It's all I could think about was the old Lenny Bruce line that the only justice that occurs in the halls of justice is in the halls. But the charges were dismissed, and that was nice. And the assistant district attorney who told us that the charges had been dismissed, actually, so there were two of us who showed up to make sure they were being dismissed. And the assistant district attorney actually thanked us for our work and encouraged us to keep fighting for the climate.
I find it interesting that the district attorney thanked you for your work, because I'm really curious as to what the individual attitudes of the officers that are actually doing this arresting on behalf of the state to arrest people that want, sane energy policies. What was the general attitude of the police during that encounter?
Well, I want to go back one step. It was the assistant district attorney, it was the lowest person in the chain of command who was handling the arraignments yesterday. It wasn't the elected district attorney who actually sent a press release threatening us that she was going to drop these charges because we've already been punished enough. but warning us that she would prosecute if we broke the law again in the future. So I don't want to give her any more credit than she deserves, the district attorney, Beth McCann. But in terms of the police, you know, and this was a powerful learning experience for many of us. I'm an older activist. I've actually first was arrested in 1971 protesting the Vietnam War. So I've been doing this for a long time, but they were kids from the Sunrise Movement who were arrested for the first time. And, you know, in addition to, you know, seeing the harshness of the, you know, of the enforcement, you know, we got to experience briefly for 30 hours what a lot of people go through as part of their regular life in the criminal justice system. So, you know, as one example that I think is really significant is, and every police officer and guard is a different kind of person. So the very beginning, you know, when my hands were handcuffed behind my back, I asked the guard if he could. I said it was too tight and was hurting. Could he loosen it? And I couldn't be sure, but it sure felt like he made it tighter because, you know, he wanted to inflict a little bit of pain. And later on, about 20 minutes later, when there was a different guard and I said my hands were getting numb from how tight it was, he loosened it and then whispered in my ear, you know, don't do anything crazy, but they're not locked anymore. I mean, there was no need to have handcuffs on us. We weren't resisting. We weren't threatening. But there certainly was no need to tighten them to cause pain. But some of them wanted to do that.
Has the governor responded at all to your calls for a ban on fracking?
Well, I want to say this real clearly. Jared and I have Governor Polis and I have a friendly relationship going back to when, actually, before he got elected to Congress. But he would always return my calls from Congress from cell phone to cell phone. Before he announced his candidacy for governor, he called me on my home phone and in the evening and asked me what I thought. And he told me, you know, he was going to run because he thought the other people running weren't sufficiently emphasizing the climate crisis. And I told him, you know, I think you've got the right message, but you're the wrong messenger. When we were arrested, I immediately, or the day after, so I got released late on a Friday night, over the weekend, I texted the governor asking him to speak up to have the charges dropped, and really, from past experience, expected him to respond. And I tagged him on Facebook and expected him to respond because he always has, and he chose not to.
So were you guys acting independently or were you affiliated with Extinction Rebellion or the Sunrise Movement or one of those groups?
good question. But so in terms of the framing, there were members, people who were participating in the action were members and activists with Extinction Rebellion and with Sunrise Rebellion or the Sunrise Movement. I happen to not be a joiner. I'm just an activist. So I was acting independent of both groups, but I've got friends in the groups. And now that I spent 30 hours in jail with some of them, I've got even more friends and closer bonds.
This is HMM correspondent Alexis Goldsmith, and we're speaking with Alan Rosenfeld, who is a resident of Colorado State and was arrested at the Colorado State of the State for protesting inaction or insufficient action on climate change. Alan, I'm just curious as to what your thoughts are as a lawyer on this clear pattern of environmental injustice where the government, from Standing Rock to the State of the State, across the country, people who see that polluters are spilling oil into wetlands, poisoning the soil, poisoning the air, and not being punished for it. But the people that are protesting that are the ones that are getting arrested rather than the climate criminals. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Wow, that's a big topic. It's very reasonably frustrating for people who pay attention. I mean, there, you know, it's, again, that was my initial comment about the irony of the building, you know, being called, you know, the Justice Center. There's no justice in the way the legal system works. It's, you know, again, I've been an attorney for, almost 35 years now. And, you know, the best I ever say is that, you know, the lawyers and the laws have replaced what used to be the gunfighters, where the fastest gun would be the one who determined right and wrong. But it doesn't determine right and wrong. It just determines winners and losers. There's no justice involved. And especially, you know, with the way our government is being corrupted by money, how it's getting worse and worse, how the laws are being written for the benefit of the wealthy and the people who gather their wealth through criminal means. I'm repeating myself, but we're like a third world country where we just have to resist. The imperialists are taking over our government and seizing our land, and we have to resist with whatever means are available. But, you know, what we've learned from history is that we need to resist nonviolently, because that makes it a better world.
So you participated in this nonviolent action. You were arrested and detained for 30 hours. What made you decide that civil disobedience was an action that you wanted to take?
As I said, I've been doing this for a long time, since 1971. I participate in civil disobedience because I believe we have a moral responsibility to stand up for justice whenever called upon. We have a responsibility to stand up for the weak, for the vulnerable, for our climate, for our children and grandchildren. I've lived my life inspired by the quote from Robert Kennedy. I forget the exact, I think it was 1965, perhaps. He was speaking in South Africa, and he said, you know, every time someone stands up for justice in the world, it's like a little ripple in the pond. And if enough people stand up for justice, those ripples get bigger and bigger until they're waves. You know, that's all we can do is stand up for justice.
So the U.S. is a pretty big country, which is making this divisiveness even more of a problem. New York is pretty far away from Colorado. For us that live in New York, can you tell us what the general attitude towards climate change, towards climate action is in Colorado? Do you have a sense of that?
Yeah, I know we all live in our bubbles, and you know, it's true. It's not just a joke. But, you know, certainly Colorado is now a state, it's a blue state that's controlled by Democrats. And the vast majority of the Democratic voters have no doubt that climate change is real, have no doubt that there's a crisis bordering, you know, this, whether you call it an emergency or a crisis, you know, we have this, you know, the situation that, and whatever the deadline is, we're getting closer and closer to the point of destruction. Fracking poisons our water and our air and is killing us. So the Democrats got elected in Colorado by promising to stop fracking, to control oil and gas, to stand up for our safety. And then they've betrayed us. And it's, you know, this is, you know, the frustration that people feel all around the country is, what do you do besides vote when the people who vote promise you what you want to hear, and then they don't do what they promise?
So there's a pretty big division in the Democratic Party right now, centrist versus progressive, democratic socialist versus corporate Democrat, excuse me, whatever you want to call it. Do you see that division in Colorado as well?
No, in Colorado we have the division is between the insiders who run the party and get elected to office by promising to do what the progressives want, and the progressives who are the grassroots of the party. There isn't any big split. You know, there's a very small number of, in my opinion, very small number of corporate Dems, of, you know, of oil and gas Dems in Colorado. It's just the elected officials are scared of them. I mean, they just got no guts.
Do you think we could ever get to a point where a progressive candidate could stand up to the oil and gas industry?
Yes. Simple answer, yes. I'm an optimist. I live my life as an optimist. I am the Boulder County volunteer team leader for Elizabeth Warren, who I believe is going to win the nomination and stand up to oil and gas, and certainly stand up to the corporate powers and the oligarchs. I think what you don't know to ask is what kind of law I do, which is, you know, somewhat interesting. So primarily for 35 years, I've represented battered women and mothers of sexually abused children in high conflict custody cases. Another fashion of trying to stand up for the oppressed and bring justice to the world.
And are you still practicing law?
I am, though. I am, I'm 66 years old and nearing the end of my career. I thought this arrest was, you know, to be real, you know, again, another question you didn't ask was, I really was prepared for this arrest, if it ended in a conviction, to lead to disciplinary charges and, the regulation council trying to take away my license. But so be it. If that's how it ends, that's how it ends.
You're willing to put a lot on the line for this. Why is that?
I don't know. There's some, their phrase, half phrases come back into my mind, but it still stands up to all, or comes back to all we can do as people of the world is stand up for justice whenever we have that opportunity. I come from a family that, survived the Holocaust and grew up asking the question about why didn't, you know, more people in Germany stand up to the evil. And, all I could, come up with was a commitment of my own that when I see evil, I'm going to stand up to it.
Do you have children, Alan, or grandchildren?
I don't have grandchildren, but I have three adult children.
What do you have any comment on the case brought by youth to the federal courts about their right to be protected by the government from climate change, being thrown out in federal court?
Well, it's a shame, but again, there is this myth that, and I could probably get in trouble for saying it, but the myth is that federal judges are fair and impartial, when in reality they are appointed, for their politics. And the corporate powers have taken over the federal judiciary. So it's not surprising, it's just sad.
Well, this has been our conversation with Alan Rosenfeld, a climate activist and lawyer out of Colorado. Alan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Sure. Nice talking to you. Be well.